Hi, my name's Jocelyn. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. One of the things they tell us is to learn everything we can about alcoholism. Thank you, Dawn, for the education. I appreciate it. So, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for my program. I'm grateful for my daughter. And her alcoholism brought me here. And I'm grateful for her recovery, and I'm grateful for mine. So one of the things that I really enjoy reading at our meetings is the do's and don'ts. And every time I hear someone read them, one of them stops me. It could be a random one, like, oh, yeah, that I get that. I get that. For me today, that's me. It appears, there's a literature plug, in Alcoholism, the Family Disease. It's a brochure. And I brought a few extra copies here at the end if folks want them. It's inspiring and it's simple. So I'm going to read it first. It says the Al-Anon do's and don'ts. Do forgive, do be humble, do take it easy, tension is harmful. Do play, find recreation and hobbies. Do keep on trying whenever you fail. Do learn the facts about alcoholism. Do attend Al-Anon meetings often. Do pray. Don't be self-righteous. Don't try to dominate, nag, scold, or complain. Don't lose your temper. Don't try to push anyone but yourself. Don't keep bringing up the past. Don't keep checking up on the alcoholic. Don't wallow in self-pity. Don't make threats you don't intend to carry out. Don't be overprotective, and don't be a doormat. I love that. The first time I heard it, it's like, oh, my number. So Monday Night Dublin is my home group, and one of the folks who reads this reverses them, does the don'ts first and does the do's after, so that they're, I find, a little more inspirational. So I'm going to talk about each of them. I'm going to check my time. So the first don't is don't be self-righteous. So of course I went to the dictionary. Self-righteous, having or characterized by a certainty, especially an unfounded one, that one is totally correct or morally superior. Ouch, right? When I grew up in my family, being wrong was a sin and telling a lie was a sin. So everybody around me was always right. My parents were always right. When I asked them a question, they always had the answer. So I figured that's what adulting is, right? So I grew up, had a life, had my children, and I didn't know the answers, but I figured I had to know the answers, so I made them up. There's an Al-Anon speaker that says, you know, just landed on my head, you know, and then I knew what it was. So more often now, I sometimes can hear myself doing that. Last night, I was on a Al-Anon task force meeting, and somebody said, did we get a consensus about this issue? And I'm like, oh yeah, got a consensus about that issue. Someone went through the minutes, said, nope, didn't, never got a consensus, you know? Ah, apology coming up, amends time. For me, being right is more important than being in relationship. And it's something I'm learning. It's my ego, it's something I've got to work on. Don't try to dominate, nag, scold, and complain. It has the word try. I don't try, I do it. I do those things. I'm not sure why they have the word try in there. I had a black belt in dominating. Sometimes I still do. I learned from my dad that dominance works. As an only child, I literally believed that the world revolved around me. Every time we drove into a new block, I believed that the people there were set in motion by my coming into that block and played their parts. And I think sometimes in the back of my mind, I might still feel that way. So I expected people in my life to bow to my will. My husband and my children, especially. My older daughter, the recovering alcoholic in my life, didn't act out. She acted in. She was suicidal. And we sent her to residential treatment for 2 years. My husband left. My younger daughter died in a motorcycle accident 17 years ago. Dominant snagging, scolding, and complaining is not working out for me. What was the common denominator? I'm not saying that I created those experiences, but I was involved. I was engaged, and all of those things happened. I had no control. We have a saying in Al-Anon, we didn't create the alcoholic. We can't control, and we can't cure the alcoholic. But what can we do? We can contribute. So when my daughter and her son were living with me, I didn't realize she was drinking at the time. I pretty much took over the mothering for her grandson, for my grandson, because she was struggling and she was having a hard time. And I didn't, you know, I just, yeah, I could do it. And I could, I'll take over, thanks. I could probably do a better job. Maybe if she had had that responsibility, things would have turned out differently. I don't know, but I sure didn't need to take it on. I already raised two children. So talking about dominating, so this summer, my grandson, last summer he had a job. And I thought he should have a job this summer. He's 17, should have a job. So I explained to him that he ought to have a job, and here were some suggestions, and we would drive by, and I only see him once a week, but the mothering juice is strong, and the grandmothering juice I sometimes think is even stronger, and I realized I was doing it. You know, we have a saying that is awareness, acceptance, action. I was aware that I was doing this with him. I had to accept that I was doing that, recognize that it was a character defect of mine, and I could take a different action. So I made an amends to him and said, that's not my job. It's between you and your mom. If you want to get a job, that's on you. 1 week later, I went to pick him up. He got in the car, said, I'm going to take you by this place. I think they have jobs. I think it's a place we can walk in and you could see. You know, I just was back there again. I didn't take that moment to consider and do, I didn't pray. I didn't take a second. I use this analogy with my daughter, and that was that I kept throwing pillows under her so she wouldn't hit rock bottom. Anytime something happened and it would be, I thought, bad for her, I'd throw a pillow under her. You know, this'll help. This'll help. Thank you. All right. So stopping the pillow throwing might make a difference in her life. but it'll surely make a difference in mine. It's not my job to throw pillows. It's trusting that they and their higher power would know the next right thing to do, but it's not me and my higher power's job to do that. Don't lose your temper. Doesn't mean don't be angry, don't feel things, don't feel sad or angry. It's just what I would do with it. Emotions just happen. My daughter died 17 years ago, and about a week before the anniversary of that day, I don't even realize it, but I start getting very sad. My body knows, even if I don't know. So emotions, I've learned, just kind of happen. In my family, my mom's motto was keep the peace. Don't give in to feelings. She'd always used to say, save your tears for something important. So every time I wanted to cry, I'd ask myself, is this important enough to cry? And usually I thought, well, maybe something else would be more important. My dad's only reaction, his only feeling was rage. One time I didn't want to practice the piano, and I said no to him. That first time I ever said no to him, I was about 8 years old. He started yelling at me. He chased me up the stairs. I locked myself in the bathroom. He told me if he didn't unlock the door, he would tear it down, and he spanked me. And my mother was in the other room with a migraine and wasn't there for me. So that was a lesson in rage. You know, I think I learned that rage works, but maybe the only emotion that I'm allowed to have, because I grew up experiencing it. Both of my parents grew up in alcoholic homes, I've discovered. Both of them had fathers and brothers who were alcoholics, and I think this is how they learned to cope. And I learned from them how to cope. So they talk about alcoholism being a family disease. In my case, it's generational. And what they learned, I learned from them, and then made an example of for my kids to learn from me. For my older daughter, recovery was, she was always a very sensitive and emotional person and showed it, and I didn't want her to have and act out those feelings. So I gave in. I didn't want her to feel bad. I didn't want her to feel angry with me. So we went on a vacation one time, and she was upset because she had to sit in the back seat. And I was like, okay, we'll sit in the front seat, because I wouldn't want her to get upset, and I wouldn't want to have to deal with it, and I didn't want her to have those feelings. So she sat in the front seat, and my mother-in-law was there, and she said, what are you doing? You know, your husband's driving the car. It's okay for you to sit in the passenger seat. And it had never occurred to me that as an adult I could make that choice. It's kind of like when I was raising my kids, I wish there was like the nanny program. I knew I was doing something wrong, and I wish someone was following me around to see what I did so I could do something different. Don't try to push anyone but yourself. Again, with the try, right? Don't try to push anyone but yourself. I did push everyone but myself. It was easier than pushing myself. My dad always pushed. Do your homework, go to school, get this kind of job. I thought that my life needed to be run by someone on the outside. I thought accomplishments came from the outside. It wasn't something that I did. It was something that someone told me and pushed me to do. So it was my duty to push my children. My older daughter, I took her on college tour at 10. Doesn't everybody do that? A paper route at 12. And I encouraged my ex to get another degree, you know, because it's something that I thought they should have. And if I encourage them to do it, then of course they do it, because everything comes from the outside. So I'm learning how to push myself a little bit better. And there's a saying in Al-Anon that I love. The first time you say something to somebody, it's a suggestion. The second time it's manipulation, and the third time it's control. So I try to keep myself to one, and sometimes even the first one, if you said it 5 years ago, you probably don't even have to say it again. Don't keep bringing up the past. It implies that people don't or can't or don't want to change. I'd hate to be tied to the choices I made in the past, even the ones I made yesterday. I'm blessed with a poor memory. I can't remember anything, and I think I taught myself that because if I lived with all the guilt and anger and angst I had over the choices that I made, I might not be able to live with myself. And the quickest way not to deal with all that is to not have a memory of it. I hope I've learned from my mistakes, but it's my job to do that, not anyone else's. Don't keep checking up on the alcoholic. It's the only do's and don'ts that actually mentions alcohol. Kind of interesting. But you could say don't check up on anybody. But for the alcoholic in my life, yes, I got out the marker, the pencil, and marked the levels in the alcohol in my house when she lived with me. Check. I drove around all of the East Bay to find my daughter when she didn't answer my phone or text because I was sure she was dead on the side of the road. And I asked her AA friends, my AA friends, how my daughter was doing in the program. Of course, they never told me. None of my business, right? So the trick is to give myself and other people the dignity to make our own choices and to live with the results of those choices. Don't wallow in self-pity. My pity palace has pillows. It's dark, cozy, and familiar. But thanks to Al-Anon and my higher power, I visit it less often. It's not productive to be there. You heard the old saying about rocking in a rocking chair? You're doing something, but you're not getting anywhere. And my higher power, when I ask for help, we'll get to ask for help. Struggle. Gently takes my hand. I can walk away from my pity palace. So my poor me story, you know, divorce, daughter died, other daughter alcoholic, struggling grandson, partner dies, you know, I had been and continue to be, could continue to be a victim to all those things, but they didn't happen to me. They happened to other people, and I was there, and I was part of their lives. But I don't need to take that on. I don't need to live my life with a victim story. If I'm a victim, I have no agency, I have no choices. And I don't want to live like that. And I'm trying real hard not to live like that. But when I do have choices, they used to be binary ones, that like the yes or no, you know, like I'll have sponsees sometimes and, you know, they could say, well, I either have to keep working like this or quit my job. And I say, okay, those are two choices. Now give me at least 10 more. What are 10 more things you can do? And I recognize how hard that is because it took me a long time to learn that too. It's not one side or the other. It's all the range in between. You know, you could cut back the hours. You could get another job. You could, you know, there are tons and tons of things. But my first thought is either the yes or the no. So what I've learned in the program a lot is learning the shades of gray. Don't make threats you don't intend to carry out. Not me. I don't threaten. I just do. You know, there were no threats. There was no time limit. It was just, I've reached my limit, go. That's my dad's rage. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. I reached my limit, boom. When my daughter was acting out, it was like I didn't say, let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation, you know. What's going on? It's like, I can't deal with this anymore. You have to leave. So no threatening, no gray area. So threat, the word implies action won't need to be taken. The threat alone is enough to get people to change. Right, the implied threat. So with my grandson, when he wouldn't get a job, what I said to him was, if you lived with me, you would have a job. That's kind of a veiled threat, but it could be interpreted as, you know, withholding love, for sure. Someone at the speaker meeting I went to, an AA meeting a while ago, talked about saying something to someone and watching their spirit close. And I've noticed that since I learned that, and it was one of the most powerful things I've ever heard, is to say something to someone and watch them just shut down. And knowing that I had the power to do that is frightening. You know, they had the power, they have a choice at some level, I guess, of whether they wanted to do or not. But don't be overprotective. I don't know any other way to be protective, just over. Right? Fear-based philosophy like my dad's. What if the alcoholic in my life drops out of school, doesn't go to college, gets hurt, can't get a job, dies? It's about me. It's about how I'll feel if she does those things, right? It's not about her. My job is to let go and let her make the choices for herself. Don't be a doormat. And its sequel, don't treat others like doormats. Don't devalue myself. I teach others how to treat me. One of the things I tell my sponsees is, I will love you till you love yourself. I think I'm pleasing others, but I'm giving myself away. I was that person in a meeting. If someone coughed, I'd be there with a cough drop. Someone started crying, I'd be there with a Kleenex. Not my job, you know? I would let people do things to me that I've often said that if the police could look inside my brain, they would arrest me for emotional and physical and spiritual abuse. Because that's what I do to myself. And I let other people do that to me. All right, now we're on the do's, woohoo, to forgive. No one ever truly recovered from the effects of alcoholism by harboring anger or fear or by holding on to grudges, is from how Al-Anon works. We must find compassion for the alcoholic. Part of everyone is lovable, including ourselves, and deserves unconditional love and respect. Believe in the inherent dignity and worth of every person. I can forgive based on that spark of love, not for someone else necessarily, but the spark of love that I have in myself. Because I can't and won't live with resentments. After I finished my step 9, making amends to folks, the thought of going through that process again terrified me. It was so hard. And now the thought of doing something to make an amends to another person, I like step 10, I'll do it like that. I'll do it like that because I don't want to live with it. I just don't want to live with it. I think it's amazing. Do be humble. From step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So humility, self-acceptance. We can't cure ourselves or our shortcomings. For me, it's about letting go of my ego. My ego is large. My ego is huge. It's getting a little bit smaller, but I say in the first 5 minutes you meet me, I will tell you something about me to make myself feel good in my own eyes. I was walking today in an area that I know pretty well, and I saw some people with a map, and I offered to help. And they asked some advice, and I gave it to them, and we chatted for a minute, and she said something like, "Oh, did you grow up here?" I told her my life story in 2 minutes. Why? I mean, I needed to do that. I try to ask other people questions. First of all, I can't lie. We established that earlier on, but what I know about the things I have done, I think, are more important than who I am. So when people ask me something, I tell them what I've done. And I can't just be who I am, because that's not good enough. Take it easy. Tension is harmful. We have a saying that says easy does it, right? Wait 12 to 24 hours before you respond to email. And before you respond, read it again. I fortunately got a lift here to come tonight. And I got an email about picking me up. Read the email and responded and said, "Which is the closest BART station?" And we worked it out. I read the email again today. They told me what BART station they were going to pick me up at. I did not see that. I did not read that in the email. I just went right over it. Maybe because I knew, maybe because I'm efficient. I got to get things done. The Serenity Prayer. Take it easy. Tension is harmful. I knew I belonged in this program, and I knew the program worked. The night that my daughter took my grandson over the Altamont Pass when she was drinking, and they weren't home by 11 o'clock at night, and I was sure that there was an accident. I was sure I would get a call from the police. I was sure they were dead on the side of the road. I had just been going to Al-Anon meetings, and I started saying the Serenity Prayer. I said the Serenity Prayer for 2 hours. That was such progress for me, because I wasn't worrying. I was saying the Serenity Prayer. The minute the key hit the door, I fell asleep. But that's when I knew that I could do this. Do play. Find recreation and hobbies. I'm too busy being a doer to be, I'm too busy being a doer instead of a being. I'm defined by my work. My dad worked. Even when he was doing something he said he enjoyed, he was gritting his teeth. Everything growing up was work, 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 work. A hobby is defined as an activity done in one's leisure time for pleasure. I have no idea what that means. I just have no idea what that means. So when I volunteer, I do it out of guilt a lot of the time, because I think I should. You know, we talk about shooting all over ourselves. Or I do a lot of Al-Anon service, and it's like, well, no, that's work. That's not a hobby. That's not something I do. What do I do after I finish all the work? I'm working on it. Joke. Do keep on trying whenever you fail. No problem. I never fail. I just wear everyone down. Right? If something didn't work, it was someone else's problem. My responsibility gene is so strong that I feel responsible for everybody else. I had some examples doing service where it failed. I was in a prison, and there were a bunch of us that went in for a meeting there, and it amongst the Al-Anon volunteers, it just exploded. And I blamed someone else for that. That was their problem. It wasn't their problem. They were part. I was there, you know? That was my part. If I had done something differently, maybe we would still be there. But it was more important for me to blame someone else. Do learn the facts about alcoholism. Come to meetings like this, hear speakers, where I learn about alcoholism. I go to some AA working groups, talk with my daughter, and listen to speakers on YouTube, read Al-Anon literature, lots of good stuff out there. Do attend Al-Anon meetings often. I have my home group. It's every week. I'm afraid to go to another group. I keep saying I'm going to go to other meetings, and I do plenty of service during the week. I've got my Al-Anon time is well represented, but part of me is afraid to go to another meeting, and that usually means it's something I should do, right? If it's a fear that I need to overcome. So it's something I'm still working on for sure. Do pray. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So I think that's the first mention of the word prayer in the 12 steps, but it's implied earlier, step 7, for instance. Prayer is personal, and it's the very last thing I do. When I'm completely stumped and all of my tricks don't work, it's like, oh, yeah, right. I got to pray. I still try to power it through with no power. What about that? I'll add a few more dues. Do get a sponsor. Do read literature. Do service and get a service sponsor. Keep coming back. As you probably guessed, I love the do's and don'ts. Thank you for taking this journey with me.